So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review.
So how do you guys know each other?
Twitter friends, and ran into Comedy Bar a few weeks ago.
Right. Cool.
This is weird.
Yeah. Have you seen John perform?
No, I haven't.
Yeah,
no.
Thankfully,
it was actually, oddly enough, for some reason, I don't know, I've never gotten really a straight answer, but there's a huge improv stand-up rivalry.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's all right. I don't understand it. It's,
It's just, but it's one of those things.
Crips without the weapons.
Yeah, with just...
There aren't people that do both?
There are, but...
From everyone I've talked to, it's very tough to do one or the other because... I don't know.
Yeah, you got a group of improvisers, and it's usually like, hey, how are you doing? Good, and they're all happy, and then, you know, like, there was a perfect moment at the Comedy Bar the other day where it was improvisers, and they had thrown a surprise party for their friends, and they had a really nice cupcakes and a cake. And then there was me and my friends and talking about, like, the new... My friend was going on about this new antidepressant he was on, and we were all very interested. It was just, like, night and day of excited and excited.
So the improvisers are sort of I guess the...
They're like the flock.
Yeah. Well,
Raven's flock. I was going to say, like, they're sort of the happier, positive fans.
Yeah, it's the, like, spirit squad versus the flock.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah, gotcha. Exactly.
So this is it!
Welcome to Review Away. It is John Pollock, joined not only by Wei Ting, but a special in-studio guest. First of all, Mr. Ting, how are you today?
Doing fantastic.
We are joined in studio, this time not by Damian Abraham, but Dylan Gott, Toronto stand-up
comedian.
Legend.
Legend,
yeah,
yes.
We're gonna build you up huge here, Dylan. Welcome here to the Review Away studio. Is it everything you envisioned?
It's beautiful. The view is great. This is amazing.
Very spacious, as
yes,
you can
there's
see.
Yes, there's a TV that just says Toronto Digital over and over again.
As do most podcast
yeah,
studios,
exactly.
I would assume. We are going to be chatting ECW, WrestlePalooza coming up in just a little bit. But I want to chat a bit about you, Dylan, because we've already done pretty much a 30-minute show before this show. And I'm very fascinated here because we always talk a lot about kind of the connection with wrestling and comedy. There seems to be a lot of crossover here, and you a perfect representation of this, because the first time I got to see you perform, you were opening up here in the city for Mick Foley.
Yes, that was very, very exciting. I don't when I first met that guy, I just said, "You're Mick Foley," and he just kind of was like, "Oh no, one of these guys."
Yeah.
And I was like, "I'll
yes,
be
the Hell in a Cell hurt."
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh man. But yeah, I don't know, I think there's a big crossover, mostly because of just I don't know, being on stage is kind of the same thing, too. You got to deal with hecklers all the time. I saw an indie show where Kevin Steen did a head scissors and then called a guy an idiot, like right back to back.
Yeah.
And it's like, and everyone says, all
the
comedians.
Head scissors idiot spot.
Exactly, yeah. You just mail that one in. But yeah, and I've heard so many people say it's the closest thing to doing stand-up comedy.
What is
which just sounds weird, but.
Every comedian has a different tact when it comes to hecklers. What is your head scissors spot that you go to?
Oh, my head scissors? I don't really get heckled that much. But if I do, I kind of just shut them down. It depends. Because sometimes it's a polite heckle. and then sometimes there's a guy challenging you to a verbal fight, which really gets awkward in, like, small towns. A lot of small towns guys think stand-up comedy is, like, well, I'll just yell at this guy, and then he yells something back, and then we high-five, and we get drunk. And, like, see, that's what they think it is.
See, at that show that we were at, I mean, Mick Foley got a few, because this was a later show, and there was alcohol aplenty, especially in the area I was observing this from. And Mick Foley tried the kill him with kindness thing, where he singles the guy out and says, listen, everyone's really paid their money to come see this. We'd appreciate it if you just didn't try to, you know, overtake the show here. I just want to give everyone their money's worth. Almost making this guy feel so disappointed in himself for daring to interrupt Mick Foley.
Yeah, that was but the other thing about the underground cinema is that you can smoke pot in there.
Can you?
So people were – did you – You didn't see
that.
People.
I didn't even notice that. I thought people were just doing it on their own volition.
You mean legally? You could smoke pot in there?
Yes. We might have to edit this part out.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I don't know what the rules are on it, but I saw people.
Because there is that one place in Toronto, isn't it? The Vapor Lounge,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Where you definitely
Vapor Lounge.
Can.
There's a lot of Vapor Lounges in Toronto.
Well,
but
then you can actually smoke pot anywhere.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I think we've passed the cultural boundary of, you know, getting caught with a joint in public and much happening to you.
But you do get ticketed still, don't you? Don't you? Isn't
I think you've got to have like a significant amount on you.
Is it on your criminal record? Did they decriminalize it or what? What's the status on that?
This is the wrong show for any.
I do know there was
updates on statutes.
We're so uncool.
There was a raid on a pot room comedy club place in Toronto.
Where does this exist?
This is the Underground Comedy Club at Broadview and Queen.
Now you're just outing them as this drug front now.
No, well, it's not that hard to tell. There's a lot of tie-dye. Anytime you see dogs more than six in an establishment, I think that's a pretty good. Plus the fact that they have all those free hemp posters on there. But the cops went in one time. They watched an entire show. And then they were like, surprise, this is a raid.
Oh, that's a dick move.
What?
The chief or whatever showed up and yelled at them because he's like, well, all right, first of all, they're not doing anything bad. It's just pot. Second of all, now you guys can't work the rest of your shift. And he suspended them for an indefinite amount of time. For wasting, for well, going on like an undercover.
The cops were
mission.
Punished.
Yeah, the cops were punished. Oh. They called in backup, and the backup just kind of yelled at them and told them to stop.
Did you hear about the big gambling bust in Markham on Super Bowl Sunday this past weekend? There was this huge. It was in Markham, and it was like 3,000 to 4,000 people for this Super Bowl party at this big venue. And the cops busted in on them during the game because there was an illegal gambling ring going on inside of this place. Yeah, it's all over the news and stuff like that.
Well, between how like a sort of like a pool between all the attendees?
I'm guessing so. Like just
is that, just it, like a pool?
Yeah, but is that any different from our office pool or I don't know, a friendly bet at a
I never house? Understand the legalities when it comes to pools and stuff because whenever you hear people on television or radio, it's like this is for exhibition purposes only when they give out odds. It's like tongue-in-cheek thing. Like, we know you're all gambling, but you're technically not supposed to. I don't understand it at all. I don't understand.
I think it's one of those things where they just kind of have to bust someone on Super Bowl Sunday because people just gamble on everything on the Super Bowl. There's gambles on the weather. My buddy one time lost $5,000. Was $5,000 on the national anthem.
Oh, shit. Like,
it was amazing. It was amazing.
What were the circumstances?
It was over under.
Oh, how long it would be.
Yeah, and it was Carrie Underwood. Carrie Underwood went over, and I've never seen a guy swear so much at 6 p.m.
Well, what is the approximate length of the national anthem? How would you
know? I think it's over under three. I think the over under is like 5 seconds, so it's like 3:02 to 3:07.
Oh, that's a tough.
And she held a note to make it 3:08, and he lost his mind.
You wonder what is the point where you sit down with your buddy. Put $5,000 on a national anthem, and you say, you know what? There might be an issue here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he knows. He's like, oh, it's a disease.
Do you know who sung the national anthem this year at the Super Bowl?
Alicia Keys.
Jennifer Lawrence, fiance of David Otunga. Segue back.
What?
Jennifer Lawrence sang the national anthem this past Sunday at the Super Bowl.
I thought you meant David Otunga. Okay.
His fiance is Yeah, yeah. Jennifer Hudson. Did I say Jennifer Lawrence?
Yeah, you said Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer
I thought
Hudson.
That was a name change.
All these Jennifers.
I was like, all right, well, let's go with it.
Whatever. Jennifer Hudson. Feel free to correct whenever. So, WrestlePalooza 97,
yes.
Mr. Gott. We said last week, you know, Dylan's coming in and he has chosen WrestlePalooza 97. The first question we need to ask him is why this event? It's from June of 1997 at the ECW Arena. Having now watched this event, makes perfect sense why. A very historical event in ECW. But what was the motivation behind going this? Because when we reached out to see if you could come in, you replied instantly, yes, and I want to review WrestlePalooza 97. There was no, give me some time to think about it. It was just an instant WrestlePalooza 97. That is what needs to be reviewed.
Well, I figured that you guys, I listen to the show and you guys are always talking about how busy you are. Way always seems like he's about to take a nap. You are just talking about you've had 18 coffees, and I was like, I'm not going to waste these guys' time. So I just typed it in because I knew I had the DVD. I kind of forgot how great a show it was. I kind of thought it, because I placed it as the Too Cold Scorpio reunion show, and I was off by 2 years.
Oh.
I was like, why did I pick the Too
Palooza.
Cold Scorpio reunion show? But it turned out to be a great show. I had the DVD, because sometimes I go on tour, and I was telling you guys before this, but the hotels in Collingwood, that's just a town, but like they'll have $35 for wireless internet. And,
whoa.
Yeah, or something like that. So I was like, at least I'll have the DVD. And I ended up having to use the stream anyway because I don't take very good care of my DVDs.
Oh, that's so unfortunate. You got bonus points from both of us because this was a 2 hour and 7 minute
yes,
event.
Yes.
We always appreciate the shorter events. That's always a nice surprise because I went into this expecting a 3 hour show and given the benefit here
it was
two.
Probably a 3 hour show originally because what we watched was a DVD.
The home video release.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, hey, all the better. You don't need the rest of whatever we missed.
You're welcome, guys.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
So that's our review of WrestleMania 97.
The
short,
2 hours.
Sweet, and no too cold Scorpio. But I guess we should get into this show. When did you first acquire this DVD? Would this have been back? Because I don't even hear people now.
I picked
this up on DVD.
My friend married his wife. And he gave me all his ECW DVDs, and he said, and his words were, I need to grow up. And my words were, I don't.
Yes.
So
I would never give up my tape. I've got a storage unit.
Yeah.
I'm getting married.
Yeah.
I'm not getting
doing?
Rid of anything. Not a chance. Though I am I am considering the leap to eventually get these onto like a hard drive or something because these VHS tapes are dying in my storage unit at an alarming
Why
rate.
Would you do that when you could just download all these?
Well, that's the thing as well. But you know what? I feel...
Because that's not illegal if you actually have the VHS.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Is that
actually true?
I think so.
Well,
maybe I just said that. I don't know.
Of these, like, you know, 500 tapes or so that I have, it's like, realistically, which of these do I need all of these? Do I really need them all? Probably not.
None.
I'll be stubborn to not get rid of them. But at the same time, I feel way whenever I watch now an event that we are reviewing, in my head, I'm like, I will probably never watch this event ever again in my lifetime because we've reviewed it. And it's really my only impetus to go back and watch stuff because God knows I'm not going to watch a review and then say, you know what? I've got 3 more hours of spare time. Let's pop in St. Valentine's Day Massacre just because. So that's why, you know, I'm slowly, I guess, never going to need a lot of these tapes again.
I think you should keep them. Just to...
Oh, I am. I've already established that if we ever move to a bigger place, I get my own room to put all my wrestling shit in, all my fighting stuff,
and
a TV. And then I don't have to disturb anyone. I can just go in, much like this office I've created, Way, where I can just stay in here at all times.
Does your wife have any hobbies or fiance have any hobbies that you're like, that's weird?
She goes into all these weird, like, obsessions where she'll get into something, go nonstop. Like, for instance, like one day she came home and was like, I'm going to buy a Nintendo Wii. I was like, okay, cool, go for it. And she bought it, played it nonstop for like a month, hasn't used it in like 2 years.
Really?
Just gave it away to her sister. Like, she'll go into these like these fits of like 30 days. She'll be obsessed with things. And now it's like she's got like it's a game on her iPhone. I can't remember what it's called. It's some strategy game.
Oh, yeah. I think, yeah. I have a girlfriend. She's really into Simpsons The Sims or something.
It's some kind of Sims-related game. It's called, like, Capture. I don't know what it's called. But she's playing it nonstop right now. Like, hours and hours. And guaranteed, she'll quit it.
So she doesn't even notice the wrestling stuff.
She's actually, it's... I'm amazed at her patience level, because she has yet to complain about the fact that Monday nights are, I'm pretty much watching Raw and doing a podcast. Thursday night, I watch Impact and Bellator. Sunday night, I do The Law. And most Saturdays, I'm doing UFC. I'm actually a really, really shitty person to be in a relationship with, or great, because I
so many hobbies.
I give her lots of time on her own as well, so it works out well. Way, on the other hand, was in a relationship where he was not giving enough time, I think.
It was the opposite.
It was the opposite. Way, who is this fucking John Pollock guy?
It sounds like a very lucky man, and this sounds like true love, when you can a man can live with his tapes and be accepted and stay comfortable.
I knew things were bad when I asked Way. I was like, can we – or Way was like, I know Raw's on Monday night, but me and my girlfriend were hoping we could go to the Jays game, and I felt so guilty.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
I remember you saying this to me. I'm like, man, I'm really, like, stretching this relationship. I am demanding so much time of Way, and here he just wants to go to a Jays game.
No, I will never make that mistake again. Wrestling comes first.
Yeah. That's so sad, I'm pretty sure.
Wrestling. And Dylan just looks down and says, oh, my God, what are these guys are losers.
I keep telling Alexis, she
who we assume
has
is your girlfriend.
Yes, it's a euphemism and not her real name at all. But I keep telling her, like, if you piss me off, we're going to Ring of Honor.
And that's a punishment.
Because the first time I saw a Ring of Honor was at the Ted Reeves, and they went in that bathroom, and it was during the garbage strike. And
oh, we were at that show.
Oh, my God. It was you should never be able to taste a bathroom. It was disgusting.
Yeah. One of I would say maybe the worst environment for a wrestling show I've ever been to. Absolutely.
It was so
for people that don't know what we're talking about, there was a garbage strike where all the garbage
workers. This was 2009 in the fucking heat of summer. Like, it was a July show, and my God, and this was a designated dumping zone.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was. Ugh.
It happened to be the place where Ring of Honor booked their show, so we had a show at a garbage.
Actually, we did a segment of what I used to do called Politics, where we did. If you go on YouTube and just search Politics Garbage Strike, it is us at the Ted Reeve Arena surveying the damage here.
I'm talking to Lance Storm. Talking.
Oh yeah, Lance Storm was at that show.
Was at that show.
Yeah. We got Lance Storm's breakdown of Jenna Maraska's in-ring ability.
Yeah, it was no ECW arena.
Yeah.
It was super fun.
It seems that some of the most, two come to mind, in that the ECW arena and the Sportatorium in Dallas, two of the most legendary arenas for wrestling fans, shitholes. Like, realistically, Jerry Lawler was completely truthful during his promo here.
This is a great Lawler promo, too, though. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
It really was.
Before we get into the review, I'm just curious, right now, what is kind of your wrestling viewing? I mean, are you watching Raw, SmackDown? Is it kind of catch what you can? What's kind of your weekly wrestling intake?
I am very much one of the, and I know because I've heard this on the programs you guys have, but I'm very much one of the people who has pretty much stopped watching wrestling except for listening to the podcast that you guys put out.
Oh, it's a good answer.
I listen to Art of Wrestling and MLW as well. I can't do it anymore.
I find that pretty astounding, actually. Like, I don't know if I'd be able to be one of those people who could only listen to people talk about something and not really partake in it by myself. But it seems to be sort of a growing trend, I mean, at least amongst our listeners. But how do you feel like you've been – are you still keeping up with all the people? Like,
yeah, I still casually know who everyone is. I go through fits where, if I hear something's really good, then I'll watch it. But I'm not going to watch – I haven't seen a women's match in 3 years, and it feels great, guys. Like,
We haven't seen a good one in 3 years.
Exactly.
So,
there's no reason to watch. Like, what's the impetus to watch? Why wouldn't I just watch old stuff that makes me happy? And I realize it's the rose-colored glasses thing.
Sure.
But also, it's just the characters make more sense. Now there's this stop-start thing. You even see on this show we're about to review, there's the ratcheting up of some characters who are like, well, he started off at the lowest rung, now he's the lower middle, upper middle, and then main eventer. And now it just seems to be like, one week he's debuting, the next week he's the U.S. champion, and then he wins the title. Oh, wait, why isn't this guy over with the title? Now he's fired in a month. And it's okay. And I understand, like, UFC is better like that, too. They don't give a guy a chance until he really earns it, other than, like, a guy like a Brock Lesnar.
Or anybody like Rashad Evans are going to give him a middleweight title shot without really earning it, or...
No, they said they wouldn't, though. Right?
Levin's lost.
If he had won it.
Yeah. Oh, if he had won it, he would have.
If he had won it, he would have got it.
Now
but...
Pettis looks like he might be getting a featherweight. Anyway, doesn't matter. Yeah, the booking's out the window right now with the UFC. But when did you start watching wrestling?
I started watching wrestling when I was 5.
Okay.
Big Boss Man was my favorite wrestler, and still is till this day. I have a Big Boss Man mural in my house.
Wow.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Man.
How did you get a mural made?
I broke my ankle. My girlfriend felt bad, so she got one of her friends to paint me, and like...
A friend to paint it?
It was great, yeah.
You've got to send us a picture.
Teenagers, they don't know how much things should cost.
Wow.
If you find a teenager that's like, here's $20, and like, $20? Oh, my God.
What era of Big Boss Man?
Oh, early 90s. Early 90s. But I was the only person, when Big Boss Man re-debuted in his security guard gear,
yeah.
I was the only person, I swear to God, in North America who screamed, and I was so happy, and I called all my friends yelling, Boss Man's back. They still have the answering machine messages.
Shit is on, Boss Man is back.
Yeah, exactly. Boss Man's back. Everyone's like, who is this guy?
And so
I'm
you
like,
defended
he's the greatest
the
wrestler.
Because a lot of people was like, oh, this is such a departure from the Big Boss Man that WWE
How are you supposed to have a heel in the late 90s
I'm
who's got
you.
Powder blue? Plus, not many people notice this, but the one thing, he had the Confederate flag on his arm, which I never liked.
Well,
I was like, drop the flag, put the American
the
flag on there.
The Confederate flag is a strange staple of baby faces in like 80s pro wrestling
it
and
is.
Even into the well fuck today the Briscoes I mean still
yeah Confederate flag
proudly displaying the Southern Cross
but at least they don't have like in the 80s it was like Confederate flag this is our smart baby face at least the Briscoes are the baby faces where it's like they're idiots like you know what I mean
yeah the politics of Cobb County Georgia and their penal system do you have would that kind of be everyone's kind of got their golden period of pro wrestling, would that be early 90s? Is that kind of, or did you?
No, I'd say late 90s. I did have to watch some of this. I was busy, so I had to watch some of this pay-per-view on the subway, which was not the best experience. Definitely a kid came down next to me, and I was like, I don't want to watch this. Even like without noise on, without sound near a kid. But yeah, it's probably late 90s for me. Just because I was 13, I felt like wrestling was growing up with me to a point where it's like early 90s, it's for kids, and then it starts being for specifically for 13-year-olds by like 98. And then, of course, it just kind of fell off the deep end once Triple H kind of...
So you're 28, 29?
27 now.
Oh, 27. Yeah. Oh, okay, so you're a youngin' in comparison to us at the ripe old age of 28. But you're right, we've talked about this before, and that, yeah, wrestling really kind of evolved at the same time, you know, you go from 13, 14, 15 when, you know, that cartoonish wrestling of the mid-90s, I think that would have worn down that audience a lot, but instead you got, you know, this really hot period of wrestling where the characters became... Oh, and the Big Boss Man in the case of killing dogs and feeding them to Al Snow. I mean, for the most part,
great angle.
A lot more realistic characters, which is who's to say that that's not a realistic depiction.
And that's the thing. The Boss Man also gave us, I doubt this was his actual idea, but if it was, then he's also the best writer of all time, Hell in a Kennel.
Hell in a Kennel?
Where the dogs just shit themselves and had sex with each other.
The funeral scene with Big Show and his father. Cassius, stuff right. That outraged people at the time, but I think you look back in hindsight as rather comedic. Stuff that was so over the top. I mean, how could you possibly take this stuff seriously?
A young Dylan guy.
Big Boss Man showing up with the fucking horn on the,
oh,
on
no,
the
that
car.
That was the Blues Brothers car.
Yeah, the Blues Brothers car. It was amazing. Well, we're going to dive into this review now. WrestlePalooza from the ECW Arena. There was a contradictory date for this because on Wikipedia it said it was on June the 6th of 97. Yet in this they were referencing the fact that the Red Wings had swept the Flyers, which I looked up here, which took place on June the 7th of 97. And we even got like a hockey update from Joel Gertner later in this show. So I don't know when the fuck this show took place. It was in June of 97. And the backdrop here was that the Philadelphia Flyers were getting murdered in the finals of the Stanley Cup to the Detroit Red Wings. So no shortage of cheap heat from the heels here for the Philadelphia audience that were forgoing the final game potentially, of the Stanley Cup Finals to watch ECW. So yeah. I don't know if they really fucking cared about how the Flyers were faring.
The thing affected me about this show is I forgot how weird the people in ECW crowds were. There was a guy, I don't know if you guys noticed this.
Probably.
But who had just a leather vest on.
Yes. With no shirt.
With no shirt and like a Nation of Domination hat that he must have made himself.
Wow.
And there were so many ponytails. I counted in the entire show, two women and two children. The rest were just weird-looking white guys.
Like the gene pool of the ECW was something to behold. I always regret not getting to watch a show at the ECW arena because it would have been a live experience. The most we got here in Canada was when they ran Mississauga, and I did not get to that show either. Did you venture out?
No,
that,
I didn't.
That lone
I
was, ECW TV taping.
Yes, I was very, very jealous. Some of the people I did know went there, but it was Canadian people. People trying to act like they're on ECW rather than we have our own weird wrestling
article.
Fans here.
Yeah,
one guy like at that ROH show, I saw a guy who was on. He was reading a book about birds. He watched the Bryan Danielson match without blinking, closed the book, and left. He was right next to me, and then I was like, "Is this guy coming back?" Nope, he left. All I wanted to see was Bryan Danielson do flying head scissors, and then he was like, "I'm gonna go kill someone or whatever weird thing he does."
Wow.
I was like,
"Fascinating."
That's about birds.
That's what you're.
It was a weird. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life.
I feel like there's a shortage of like those real. Like you see the guys now. Like we have Brock Lesnar fan. There's like sign guy, but you don't get those. Eclectic fans like that the ECW arena produced. I mean, we had Faith No More guy in the front row of this event, sitting right next to Mike Johnson of PW Insider. If you spotted that, I have a keen eye for audiences.
Okay, Lantern fan was there as well.
Who?
Green Lantern fan.
I don't know who that is.
The guy who wears a Green Lantern shirt.
Oh, I assume that is this guy a notable wrestling
well, he's
attendee.
Just he's pretty much at every independent wrestling show and a lot of ECW shows. So,
okay,
Green Lantern fan. A lot of people know him.
Well, I'm clearly hurting my credibility by not being familiar here. The show started off with Joey Styles in the ring to start the card and welcomed Rick Rude. Who, if you've never experienced Rick Rude doing color commentary, well. Thankfully, there was a first half of this show where he was not on. I regard Rickard as one of the worst color commentators of all time, alongside superstar Billy Graham and Arn Anderson, that accentuate the rule that great promo doesn't always equal great color commentator.
It was just kind of sound bites.
It really felt like Paul Heyman was writing down lines and literally passing the paper to Rickard. Ooh, he's feeling that one from down under. And it was like they were in separate rooms, not even communicating with one another. Styles and Rude, for whatever reason, he only called half the show.
It really is a different skill. And Rick Rude, I just thought throughout this whole show, he was just not really a babyface, not really a heel, and not really really effective. He was just another voice.
Just a creepy old man who was Googling
Francine. It was amazing. I add that as a note, how quickly he would be like, you know, you really have to work the leg because that plays into a submission. And Francine looks great. Why isn't she sitting on my face? It would be like, ugh. Oh, wow. Like, and just like stuff that would it, like that creepy. All you listeners out there were so creeped out. That's how I felt this whole pay-per-view at times.
Styles announced that Stevie Richards is injured. He was to challenge Terry Funk for the ECW title on the show. So this was coming 2 months after their first barely legal pay-per-view. So instead tonight, it would be Terry Funk defending against Chris Candido. And, you know, unfortunate here that the death count already at 2 on this show. And I've mentioned 4 names, 5 names. from there, Rude wishes his best to Richards on his spinal injury. Candido has the chance of a lifetime. And also tonight, the final battle, not presented by Ring of Honor, between Tommy Dreamer and Raven, as Raven was leaving the company. And Rude adds, just in case this wasn't cliche heavy, it's put up or shut up between Tommy Dreamer or Raven, which was a fact. Also, they were doing the tag titles tonight. The Eliminators would defend against the winner of Dudley Boys against the Sandman and Balls Mahoney. And Rude refers to the Dudleys as men on a mission. The white version. And they basically, it looks like here, blew up their August pay-per-view by moving Sabu and Taz to this show. It looks like Raven leaving the company threw a ton of changes into their booking plans. And that was the opening. And then they cut to Shane Douglas and Francine in the ring to the heartwarming chant of "She's a whore" from the ECW fans.
That was wonderful.
Yeah, very.
There was also "dirty slut."
Oh, well, of course. Of course. Can't be one without the other, Dylan. And she pulls out a Philadelphia Flyers shirt from a bag, and then Shane grabs a broom to sweep the shirt. So, first Flyers heat of the night. And the crowd actually cheered this and applauded, which I found very
funny. Yeah, that's
the crowd was like, yeah, this isn't going to work on us. Fuck the Flyers. And Douglas then challenges his opponent tonight to have an actual wrestling match, and that would be the rookie, Chris Chetty, the cousin of Taz, coming out of the ECW House of Hardcore training facility for the ECW television title. This was like pre Guido gimmick for Chris Chetty, where he just played like the blue chipper, Chris Chetty. And Douglas was the television champion, as I mentioned at the time. They start off basic wrestling match, and then it eventually escalates on the floor. They pump up the fact that Chetty was a high school state wrestling champion in New York. High school, you say? And Francine puts her foot on the rope here. Put her foot on the rope. Chetty was stalking after Francine. Styles is giving information here that Chris Chetty should just pop Francine in the face,
yes,
calling this woman a bimbo.
Yeah, the exact line: "Go ahead, slugger. What the hell? That's crazy."
You could get away with a lot, apparently.
And that's the guy who's like the neutral voice on the show, being like, "Oh, listen, I'm on the side of the good guys, not the bad guys. Yeah, just hit a woman in the face because she's dressed like
they
a slut."
Deserve it sometimes.
Yeah,
exactly. Waiting.
Hard to tell between Joey Styles and Ed Whalen here. There was a vertical suplex. Douglas then did the Rude pose, which was this feud that they were kind of building at the time of Rude, as Dylan mentioned, making advances towards Francine, if we can call them those. Chetty avoided a chair from Douglas and then sent Douglas's face into the chair, got a near fall. There was a moonsault off the top, but Chetty lands on his feet right into a belly-to-belly suplex, and Douglas pins him at 6 minutes and 51 seconds. Usually I time these matches, but announcer Stephen DeAngelis making this very easy for me, announcing the time of the fall at the end of each match. So look at that.
Yeah, a good quick little formulaic match. I mean, nothing too outstanding or anything, but I thought they did a good job putting a lot of shine on this guy, Chris Chetty here.
Who really realistically went nowhere in his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's exactly what I was talking about earlier, though. Like, you know, you see the ratcheting up of Chris Chetty. He got some offense. There was a reason he lost. It was because of the interference of Francine, and he's losing to Shane Douglas at this time, who is their franchise character.
He also had the Rocky Maivia, like, hair.
Yeah.
Just like flying everywhere.
Awful 90s hair.
Yeah.
Like Kid and Play or Kid or Play. I don't know which one.
Then we cut over. As Wei mentioned, there's pretty much nothing in between the matches here in terms of like vignettes or anything. They just cut right next to the next match with the FBI in the ring, including the Big Don, Tommy Rich, who is wearing a Ribera Steakhouse jacket.
A green one.
Well, yeah, for the FBI. The Italian arm.
I didn't know they made them different colors.
The Ribera Steakhouse?
They do if you're in the FBI.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And he's alongside Little Guido and Tracy Smothers, who is introduced from the Nashville section of Sicily. And the crowd just outraged here. They're not Italians, goddammit. They're trying to pull one over on us with Smothers and Tommy Rich.
I love this gimmick so much. This is so funny. Them trying to be Italian, just like the whitest guys in the world.
And they were taking on the team of the Pitbulls, and this is where the crowd started chanting "faggot" at the FBI. That's what you are. That's what the F stands for.
Yeah, it's great. They we won't. That Flyers thing won't work on us. Listen, we're smart wrestling fans. Effeminate men. My God, like this is just ridiculous.
The FBI, they got the advantage on Pitbull number one. Are we going to keep a death count on this show? Because this increases to 3.
Yeah, it's sad.
Three.
It's a sad show, for sure.
ECW, mid to late 90s. Not a great.
Yeah, pro wrestling in general, mid to late 90s.
Yeah, but the ECW locker room, took it pretty heavy, as did the WCW.
Well, you could see why on the show where they're like, because ECW always do this, but like, we don't have blue mats. And I would always be like, get some blue mats. you guys can't take these like planchas. There was a plancha later in the show that made me laugh so hard, but also I was like, oh my God.
So they get the advantage on Pitbull number one as he is tossed to the floor. Rich crotches him onto the barricade, and they get the advantage double teaming him. Then Pitbull 1, he gets the sunset flip, but the referee, Jim Molyneux, he is distracted and gets into the face of Pitbull number 2. Then 1 finally makes the hot tag to Pitbull number 2, who they deliver a powerbomb to Guido. Smothers makes the save, and then the Pitbulls have the advantage on Guido, and they hit the super bomb coming off the second turnbuckle. And Pitbull number 2, who is Gary Wolf, he pins Guido at 7 minutes and 13 seconds. Pitbulls go over.
He looked, that super bomb, he only landed on his spine.
Wow.
That looked terrifying.
Little Guido.
Yeah, it's a super bomb. both teams, I thought, were incredibly over. But then again, everybody seems really over in this ECW arena crowd. It was okay.
Watching this in hindsight, you really see kind of the art of hiding guys' weaknesses in this and not, throwing these guys out for any lengthy period of time for guys that could not really go further. Because, I mean, realistically here, Pitbull 1 and 2, they were a gimmick, essentially, and working around that well. Then we go to Joel Gertner in the ring with the Dudleys, which included Bubba Ray, D-Von, Sign Guy, and the late Dances with Dudley.
No, Big Dick.
Oh, Big Dick. Sorry. This is not Dances with Dudley. You're right. Big Dick Dudley. Very clever. Who cut a promo on the Philadelphia Flyers.
And
telling the people that they should be shot at sunrise.
I love that line.
Great line. And said the only Stanley they will have is a fat slob in the second row who is clearly identified and recognized by all the fans here, who immediately shot their heads towards where they knew Stanley sat every single show. So that was good. And said they would give him his own cup. And they couldn't see the circus because it was booked for hockey. And Styles just says, well, I'm not going to make the obligatory WWF WCW joke because it's been done to death about the circus coming to town. And the Dudleys, they then refer to Mahoney and Sandman as drunk and drunker and tells them to send in the clowns. And out come the Sandman and balls Mahoney. The Sandman rocking the 97 Sean Kemp Reebok shoes.
Oh, yeah.
Which I sadly owned at this time.
Is that right?
I actually had to note how cool his shoes were. he's wearing Zumbas, and like he couldn't have looked more like the 90s. He was great. And I assume Balls Mahoney at this time was just coming off Xanta, because he looked way more clean cut than he usually does.
Yeah. And after this match, maybe needing some Xantax. Because he took some ungodly punishment in this match. But yeah, this was a very toned down Balls Mahoney. He had like short hair at this time. Looked healthier than he did.
Yeah, he looked like he was in good shape. He looked like he was in better health when he lost the weight in WWECW.
Yeah, so they come out, they do the Sandman entrance. They drink beer, they smash it on their foreheads. One has a kendo stick, the other has the chair, and the match begins with a Bubba and Sandman in the ring, and D-Von and Balls on the floor. Mahoney spending absolutely zero time, taking the first of many chair shots right to the head. Sandman then knocks Bubba to the floor, hitting what Styles identifies as the drunken plancha. And then he comes back into the ring and just leaps over the top. Style points a negative 10, I would
say. That plancha where he goes on the top and then jumps off and misses everybody but lands right on Mahoney's calf.
Yep.
And Mahoney cannot hide how much it hurts. It's the funniest thing.
He misses.
He was so clearly drunk for this whole thing.
And not the only miss during this sequence, because the camera also missed the majority of this shot. So great work all around here.
But I think it's for a character like the Sandman,
you're not looking for grace.
You don't
and,
want Rey
fluidity.
Mysterio. No, you want a guy who does a very sloppy plancha, but just doesn't give a fuck and just goes for it.
I would love a sloppy 619 attempt from the Sandman.
Oh, that would be the worst.
Sandman coming out and trying lucha. That would have been something for this crowd. D-Von and Balls then fight into the crowd, and Sandman tries to clothesline Bubba to the floor, who does not go over the top rope. Then Sandman throws a drop kick, to which Joey Styles just goes nuts here, reacting to the fact Sandman threw a drop kick. As the other two are brawling by the concession stand, Devon's bleeding. There were just constant cuts back and forth between the two pairs. Tons of chair shots to the head. Sandman then drops a table onto Bubba on the floor. Mahoney and Devon finally make it to the ring, and they hit the 3D onto a chair, and the Dudleys get the win at 7 minutes and 24 seconds.
It was a great match. You know, only punches and chair shots, really. But that's what you want in, like, four guys. Balls, Mahoney, Sandman, and the Dudleys.
Brooke Hogan, by the way, folks, was around 10 years old at this time. If you wanted that awkwardness.
Her future husband, 700-pound Bubba Ray Dudley.
Realistically, watching this show, if you had to guess here of, you know, who is going to be working in this business 16 years from now, and the fact that both Dudleys are is incredible, and the fact that Sandman and Balls Mahoney are still taking bookings 16 years later, I don't know if that's commendable or incredibly depressing. It's one of the two.
It's the second one. It's for sure the second one. There's no way that it is commendable, but I think, oh man, I really like this era of matches, and it's like, and it speaks to another thing that they don't have very much anymore is tag team finishers. The 3D is a great tag team finisher.
There are barely any tag teams.
Exactly, yeah. And it's just a great way to stick two guys together. Like, you know, Bubba and Devon both are good on the mic. Obviously, Devon's the workhorse, and Bubba's got a bit more charisma. And you stick them together, and you have a great tag team until they learn how to be singles wrestlers.
We need a super bomb. Brought back for a tag unit.
Yeah, we need a...
Someone's got to adopt the super bomb.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
More deadly than an actual bomb. Then we've got the killer bomb Harry Smith and Lance Hoyt in New Japan.
Exactly.
Okay. And how is that different from the super bomb?
Well, a super bomb is devastating, but the killer bomb will kill you.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You can't survive a bomb.
I will say ECW certainly didn't have any issues with over baby faces. I mean, you look at the WWE now and how many people they try to force onto an audience. I mean, like a guy like a Ryback or a Del Rio or The Miz. But here in ECW, everybody was cheering for the baby face. There weren't necessarily any cool heels that this crowd were trying to cheer over a baby face. But everybody just seemed incredibly over, including Chris Chetty.
Chris Chetty. The future of the business, guys.
The rookie. Then we go to the ECW title match in the middle of the card. Terry Funk taking on Chris Candido, with Candido dressed as Terry Funk. And
why was he dressed as Terry Funk?
Because Terry Funk was one of his idols.
Yeah.
However, it was very strange because Candido was a heel at this point. But it wasn't done as like mocking Terry Funk. But he was part of the triple threat at this point, with Terry Funk as the legend babyface.
Well, they wanted to do like Shades of Grey stuff a lot in ECW, which, you know, affect as a booking strategy, whatever. But I don't know. It didn't take away from it for me at all. What took away from it kind of was how normal the match was. Like, these are just...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they started this off. Well, first they had Stevie Richards in the ring for this heartfelt promo about the fact that he couldn't wrestle tonight. He may not ever wrestle again, and idolizes Terry Funk. Something, though, about a heartfelt promo and a corn shirt that just doesn't go together, really, as he sat there in his jeans and T-shirt.
A corn shirt tucked into white jeans.
With glasses.
Yeah. Trying to seem studious in a corn shirt.
Very, very awkward look for one Stevie Richards, who, spoiler alert, would wrestle again. And the match begins, and they start with a long collar and elbow tie-up, and they want to start the match off clean with Candido hitting him with a number of chops against the ropes. They go to the floor, but then both agree, let's take it back into the ring. Let's keep this one clean. But then they'd return to the floor, and Funk gets tossed over the guardrail. So much for that match story. It was gone 2 minutes in, and they fight into the crowd. Candido hits a pile driver onto a chair on the floor, then tosses weapons into the ring, onto the table. He hits another pile driver, but in the process, the table broke from underneath them, shades of The Rock and Punk at the Royal Rumble, and the crowd, just in case they were not feeling bad enough about the fact that a table just broke and they went down into cement, the crowd gracious enough to chant, "You fucked up at these two," for a table breaking.
It's ECW, though. That's what you get when you have a bad table, I guess.
Candido then hits two more pile drivers in the ring, then hits a third pile driver. Terry Funk kicks out. Then we move over to neck breakers, which, if ever, there was a name for a move that really does not apply, it is this one, the neck breaker, which I don't think has ever broken a neck and was simply a transition spot here for Funk to kick out of more spots. Candido sets up two chairs in the ring and then one in between them, hits a reverse neck breaker onto them, and Terry sells this one big, crowd reacting very well to the spot, but then Funk kicks out again. Then we get a power bomb that Funk kicks out. This was just regular power used. And then Funk counters a German suplex into his own reverse neck breaker. Candido counters with a Hurricane Rana. Funk hits a repeated headbutts, goes for the Mahistral cradle. Candido tries to fight it, but Funk pins him at 12 minutes and 54 seconds. I think they were trying too hard to establish Candido might win this match. I just thought it was a little overkill here with all these pile drivers and neck breakers and all built around for some near falls. So it was okay, but didn't light my world on fire.
I did too. I thought for everything they attempted here, all the gimmicks that they put in, Funk, you know, as the old guy who's somehow managing to retain this world championship slot, I found it kind of hard to believe and take him seriously as a champion because you can clearly tell he wasn't as mobile and that this was really all just
a setup. This was 16 years ago.
Yeah. Well, just all just a setup for him to kick out of these finishers, and it was kind of hard to accept.
This is Terry Funk's prime once you average out his career and
that's
how
true.
Long it's lasted.
That's
this is, this,
so, yeah.
97 was a big run. This was pre-Chainsaw Charlie.
Sorry,
you go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, this is, but I think it spoke a lot to the story of, basically, it's slow and he's resilient. I really liked Funk's noises here. There's a part in the crowd where I think some guy in the crowd, tries to pat him on the back and Funk just takes a swing at him. It's great.
Fuck you.
touch me.
So that would then take us, Douglas and Francine who come out. And they're upset here as they console Chris Candido. And the crowd starts chanting bullshit here. I guess the crowd was maybe anticipating a Candido title win here. I don't know what was going on here, but it was a very awkward segue out of this segment to chants of bullshit from the audience over Terry Funk retaining the ECW title.
Yeah, I didn't really get that.
Then we go to the final battle between Tommy Dreamer and Raven. Raven accompanied by Chastity and Lupus. This had been a long, drawn-out storyline between Tommy Dreamer and Raven with the storyline that Dreamer could never beat Raven. And this was Raven's final night in the company. And he was greeted with chants of "you sold out" by the crowd as he had signed with WCW at this point. And I guess people, this was, pre-internet for most, well, 97, I guess some were on the internet, but I guess this was the era of the hotline, getting the scoop on Raven.
Yeah, I really liked how the announcer kind of, let the chants breathe. I know that's kind of a small thing, but,
absolutely. And this was before the WWE was certainly doing that stuff like this, so, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of times now, if there's a chant the WWE doesn't want, which is partially why I don't watch as much, and they don't let it breathe. They try and skirt over it. It's not happening, and they try and basically drown originality.
And they also introduced Beulah at ringside watching on. And then Lupus comes into the ring, part of Raven's flock. For those of you that ordered the TNA ECW reunion pay-per-view back in 2010, they were able to bring Lupus back, which resulted in hundreds of people saying, "Who the fuck is that?" This is who the fuck that was, Lupus. And he tells Raven to simply leave. Don't even have your final match. I'll take care of Dreamer. And Raven goes to leave, and he's going to leave through the crowd.
He had just realized it at that point.
Yeah,
wait
this.
A minute, I don't have to do this.
I've signed a contract. and Dreamer knocks down Lupus and goes after him. And this is when Rick Rude joins us on commentary, calling Lupus a dweeb.
Yeah, man. Strong words.
You don't hear that word enough in this day and age. Dweeb. And they fight into the back, surrounded by fans. They go into the crowd. They go through a table off of the bleachers. And Styles says, this too was scheduled for Hardcore Heaven, but neither wanted to wait. Wrong. WCW did not want to wait and let this guy fulfill his dates. As Rude cites the heat factor here in the building, and he wasn't talking about the crowd. No, the actual heat and how it could affect them in this hot June air in the ECW arena.
How many does the ECW arena hold? Hundreds of poorly maintained, sweaty men.
You're assuming now. You're going out on a
limb. I'm sorry. These guys probably didn't have deodorant. I apologize.
They fight by the upper deck, and they get onto a table where Dreamer back body drops him off the table, and Rude says, "Gimmick table, my patootski." great call. We don't have fake tables in this company.
Because we are dumb.
Because the table does not break here on said back body drop spot. And then they show Shane Douglas and Francine on the upper deck. And then Raven gets dropped onto the barricade where Rude says, "That railing to the Nads will take the wind out of your sails." It was just like this was like I was playing a video game where it was just like these piped in lines that could be applied to any match in any scenario.
He definitely didn't help at all. He just kind of said things.
Yeah, like,
I have a sandwich. Like, okay.
They're outside of the ring. That's not inside the ring. They go up a ladder by the snack bar to the Eagle's Nest and get launched off the ladder off of a vending machine, both men bleeding here. Then there's a drop toe hold onto a chair by Raven back in the ring. They set up another chair. Raven sends Dreamer off the turnbuckle through the chair, and Raven gets a two count. And then Dreamer grabs a metal sign from the audience, and they take out Jim Molyneux, and it's a do not enter sign. And Raven is pile driven onto the sign. Lupus runs in for the save during the cover, and then Beulah comes in with one of the worst DDTs executed in ECW history to Lupus. And then Dreamer and Beulah pose. Raven then hits a low blow for a near fall. Raven pleads to Beulah, trying to reconcile with her, but Dreamer now comes from behind with the low blow. He gets the near fall. Chastity comes in, sprays a hairspray into the eyes of Dreamer, and Raven gets another near fall here. We got a cat fight spot, and then a DDT is blocked. They get rammed into the referee again. Then Louis Spicoli runs in. He hits Dreamer with a DDT. Over under on DDTs in this match. If I said 25, would you say over or under, Way?
Maybe slightly under.
The DDT was in full use during this match. Then Dreamer hits Spicoli with the DDT. Raven then hits Dreamer with a DDT, kicks out. Dreamer then counters a DDT with the Death Valley Driver, yelling EC fucking W before hitting another DDT and pinned Raven at 15 minutes and 6 seconds. There was a huge pop here for the win. The crowd was into all the near falls at the end here, and as much as I exaggerate here, the crowd just loved this last portion here, and I thought this was really well done, particularly at the end, the final set of sequences.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you can look at a match like this and have a lot of the same criticisms that people put on the Triple H Taker matches or even any of the Taker matches over the past few years, that there are too many near falls. But if there's a time to do it, it's at a time like this when it's the last match in a long rivalry that these two are having, or at a WrestleMania. And, you know, the whole idea is to just simply pop a crowd, and it's certainly done that. I thought this match was excellent.
I thought it was amazing, too. Great, great finish. I like the choice of all the DDTs, actually, because it's a move that's really, really quick, doesn't take any setup, so things can be constantly, constantly happening, so the crowd is really on the edge of their seat. And this is something that they really didn't use in North America at this time, this many near falls type thing. So I don't know. I thought it was an amazing match, and two guys really at the peak of their careers. I think this has got to be the peak for both guys.
I think a lot of people, when they go back, I mean, this feud really was synonymous with these two, and this blow-off match was it was really a staple match for Tommy Dreamer, getting that big win over Raven, where the win really mattered after failing all those prior times. So I thought it was really, really well booked. And then we go into the big angle on the show. The lights go out. Their Super Bowl moment, which everyone was making comparisons to on Sunday, as RVD appears in the ring when the lights come back on and hits a Van Damminator as he's wearing a Monday Night Raw shirt attacking Tommy Dreamer. Then the lights go out again. Sabu appears in the ring throwing a chair at Tommy Dreamer, and they double team him while Raven walks out. And Spicoli is holding Beulah in the corner, and I believe held her for about 15 minutes in the corner of the ring.
At some point, they just started hanging out.
Yeah, I'll just sit. I'm not going to leave. Then there were huge chants of "We want Taz." The lights go out, and Jerry Lawler is in the ring as I think 100 fans minimum had an orgasm here. Jerry Lawler in an ECW arena for months and months, over a year at this point. Jerry Lawler had always knocked the company on Raw. They had done the invasion earlier in February, but here Lawler was in the company appearing, and the crowd just lost their shit here. And ECW talent is running in, but they're all fought off by Van Damme and Sabu. Lawler gets on the microphone saying, the ECW arena, this place should be built out of toilet paper because it's built out of shit. And Alfonso then calls out Shane Douglas, who is still in the eagle's nest there with Francine, saying he has no part of this bullshit, to separate himself from these heels. They had the gangsters came out, New Jack and Mustafa. They got attacked as well. Then Lawler pointing out Beulah. Look at this. Look at this slut.
I thought that was such a great... Lawler is such a great heel in this segment.
Lawler was awesome.
He can still make you hate him even though you saw him have a heart attack. Like, that is a great heel.
Dreamer was able to take down Lawler briefly here, but immediately gets attacked. And the chants continued of, we want Taz. The Sandman appeared, who came down drinking beer, but he was attacked as well. And they got double-teamed. And before we go into the next portion, starting with you, Wei, your thoughts here on this whole angle and just the first half of it involving Lawler and fighting off the ECW locker room.
I love the whole thing with the lights out and how each time the lights came back on, you were building up to somebody new. I just thought that was so, you know, we've seen lights out angles all the time, but I thought to do it this way was just excellent, and this crowd just ate everything up. And then, you know, a huge ovation for who's going to come and save ECW. They play the gangsters' music. They get a huge pop. They can't do it. Sandman comes out. They can't do it. All the build-up for that Taz running, and I just thought it was tremendous.
And with Lawler, as you mentioned, I mean, someone that this crowd really, they believed in this, you know, ECW as this underdog company and just hating you know, the WWF, and it's like Lawler was just like the most over heel in this segment here. It was, I thought it was just executed so well. And this to me was always a strength of Heyman, where it would have been very easy to have booked this show. And you come out of it with this like downer of a note where Raven's left, it's another star we've lost. By the end of this, Raven was a complete afterthought. You got all you needed out of Raven, and it was just a total buzz for what was next here with this huge angle you shot. And I thought they booked this so well in terms of making people forget about Raven as soon as he had put over Dreamer.
Yeah, and this I listened to an interview about this angle as well. I think it was Gabe Sapolsky, but he was just talking about what an amazing feeling it was, because when the gangsters came in, they had never been stopped before. That music hits and they clear the ring, and like that's what everyone in the arena thought was happening. And when they when they're stopped so easily, everyone's just kind of like, "Well, what is next?" Like, and he said it was one of the most amazing angles he's ever seen live. And like basically the reason he starts booking.
The energy later was just amazing, just even on film.
So it continues here with what Wei mentioned. Taz's music hits. Place goes insane here because they'd been chanting for him. And, I mean, Taz was just the baby face. Everyone was behind.
He just looked like the toughest man in the world.
They booked him so well. It was like this audience felt that, you know, if this were all legit, Taz would be the toughest guy in the locker room. And it was like this aura that they created for him that's just, it's incredible to compare.
He's Aces and Eights' very own.
Yeah,
live cracking color commentator.
Anyway, Taz comes out. They all leave the ring here, which I thought was great here. They just, all three of them just run away from Taz. He gets on the mic and asks Alfonso to bring the three pussies out here, calling Lawler Memphis scum, and he can suck his cock. Right? Straight to the point.
So much swearing by Taz in this. It goes from like, oh my god, this might be the greatest, most intense angle, to like, why is this short guy swearing so much?
He was an angry young man.
He was. That was the path of rage.
Shane Douglas, who just, it was like pop-up video here, just shows up telling him from up above, calm the fuck down. And Taz says to Douglas, mind your P's and Q's and go fuck that rat. Get these fucking bodies out of my ring. And Heyman is out there. Taz refuses to leave, saying he's sick of what's going on with this company. He's sick of Paul E. Fuck WWF. And tells Lawler to come get me, motherfucker. And lays down on his back. And then instructs someone to come clean my ring right before he began cleaning the ring himself. And he wants his match with Sabu right now. Fonzie comes out. And Taz says, you have 15 seconds before I will annihilate you. And he calls Taz Fat Boy. And right at the 15-second mark, Taz just cuts him off and starts attacking him. And then Sabu runs in, and this would lead to the start of the match. But one of the most famous angles in ECW history. I thought it was just so well executed here. Taz looked like this unbeatable monster here during this entire segment. And you had just... you had so much buzz for this angle with Jerry Lawler actually appearing here in this company. And it was at this point, it was amazing to see that. I mean, I don't even know if this would necessarily work today with, you know, the WWF and ECW had an actual working agreement, but there was no way you could convince these fans that there was anything here. Like, this felt like a real invasion to them at the time. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was just...
I guess the last time that really happened was ROH and CZW a couple years ago, where ROH fans thought they were better than CZW fans, and CZW fans all thought that ROH fans were like hipster douchebags, and they just actually hated each other.
And you had this, yeah, this believability that fans could accept. Uh-huh. So that led to the Taz-Sabu match. This was a rematch from Barely Legal when Bill Alfonso had turned on Taz, joining Sabu. And the match begins with Taz hitting a flapjack out of the corner after Sabu has the early advantage. He applies the red hook ringer while bridging his neck, and Sabu then drop kicks the knee. And Rude here referred to Taz as Big Taz off of his knee. Big Taz. I don't think that's ever been associated with him with that that description. There's an Asahi moonsault by Sabu to Taz on the floor. Then he goes for the triple jump moonsault, and tragedy ensued as Sabu lost his footing on the top ropes, crotching himself, and the crowd, of course, just chanting, "It's okay, this match will be fine."
Don't worry about it, buddy.
Yeah, it's fine.
Give him some water. It was really heartwarming.
Just move on to the next spot. Taz lifts him up and goes right into a T-bone suplex. That's why I never get outraged at a blown spot. To me, I enjoy watching how guys recover from this and just move on to the next spot. So it's a, I don't know. I always feel for guys when the crowd would chant at them, but it was a staple. Taz blocks a top rope Hurricane Rana, and then Taz hits a senton splash, missing Sabu, and Sabu hits a top rope leg drop, gets a two count. Then there was a table that was brought into the ring, and there was a splash onto Taz, breaking the table. Taz then sits up, applies the Taz mission, but Sabu rolls back, and the official counts three while Taz still has the submission applied. At 8 minutes, 14 seconds, so Sabu is declared the winner while still trying to keep Taz as, you know, protecting him with this finish by still giving people a finish. And the match ends. Taz then chokes out the referees, and Style cites that this is his first loss since November of 1995.
It's great. That was such a great, like, and especially in this climate now, I'm going to keep going back to wrestling today, but you look at stuff that have, like, great stuff that happens now, and they have trouble following up on it. And this is a great way, Sabu beats Taz, so he's still strong. Sabu doesn't run away, so you still keep that character believable. And he's pinned Taz, you know what I mean? And Taz gets his heat back by murdering referees. The one referee with, like, the undercut bowl cut, he just throws him on the back of his head and then picks him up. And I was like, no, for sure this guy's got a broken neck.
And I think the way they booked this finish, it was almost like Taz didn't care about winning the match. He just wanted to leave this submission on. He just wanted to choke Sabu out.
So he then choked out Bill Alfonso, and then Douglas gets on the mic telling Taz to take off, let the next match take place, you've been out here forever, and tells him to get the fuck out. And Taz says, well, first he says, you have a small penis, and he says, it's a simple gimmick, you want me to leave, you come and make me leave. And Douglas says, I don't get anything out of doing that. And I don't need to come down and show you how to throw a proper suplex, which got an ooh out of the crowd. Oh shit, they're gonna
battle. I can't believe he said that after he called him a fag a bunch. Like, jeez.
Points on form. Taz says he guarantees he could tap out Douglas in 5 minutes, and Taz says he would be willing to put the television title on the line, and says if Taz cannot last 5 minutes, then he would have to leave for 30 days. And let his family starve. Taz says, I'm so confident I can beat you in 5 minutes, I'll make it 60 days if I cannot win. To which Douglas then starts interrogating him on his savings funds and what money he has in the bank for his family. And then Taz shortens it to 3 minutes. So we get an impromptu television title match between Shane Douglas and Taz. Styles then, in commentary, cites that it will be 45 days, so clearly a bit of a miscommunication error.
This is the weird part about ECW, is at some points, like, and that happened in the Lawler blackout angle as well, is it goes from the greatest angle I've ever seen to Taz is in the ring, kind of just killing time. Like, I think in that angle, at one point he just, like, took a guy's t-shirt and he said, "This fucking sucks," and he just threw it in the crowd. And the same thing happens here, where they just kind of like, oh yeah, well, how about 30 days? Like, they could have just cut this segment down so much.
Yeah, but I really like this. I thought the back and forth between the two felt very organic and unscripted, like it would be in a real situation. And, you know, Taz constantly lowering the odds against himself just made him look like that much more of a hero. So I thought Taz was just great here. Great, edgy, badass.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's just like, and they cite this on commentary, but like, why is Douglas even taking this challenge?
You know what I mean? He wants to eliminate Taz for 60 days or 30 days.
Yeah. Watching this, it's impossible not to make the comparison point, but it was like, you can see how great Taz is when he's put into this role on the microphone. And to me, this was the chance TNA could have revamped the Taz character. All the comedy is gone. And this, to me, would have been a much more effective Taz, just as your mouthpiece. I mean, you're not going to be putting this guy in the ring, but
this guy's such a, like, you look at Taz on this show, he is two people lighter than he is now. Yeah. And, like, in shape, and he looks great. Taz now is just a slob with a gray beard. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I think even having him on your television is, frankly, a disservice to your product, unless it's to come out and say, "Hi, I was Taz."
But
suck my cock.
Yeah, exactly. Without the swearing? Sorry.
He's proven, though, on those gut check segments that he can be a serious guy. And if, you know, like, I agree with you, John. Like, if he just took away the comedy and just made him gave him the same mentality as the guy who was talking in these segments, I think he can make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. So the match begins, and Douglas is dropping elbow shots onto him, stomping Taz, attacks him, hits a swinging neck breaker, and then a rolling DDT, and just continues going after the neck of Taz. And Taz reverses a full Nelson, goes for the Taz mission, but Douglas low blows out of it, and then Douglas leaps out of an Irish whip attempt into the corner, and Taz steps back into the Taz mission, goes down to the mat, and Douglas is trying to fight it off. They tease he would get a rope break with his foot on the ropes, but then they roll over into the middle of the ring. Douglas tries kicking off the turnbuckle back onto the mat, and he taps out at 2 minutes and 52 seconds. Crowd pops huge here, and I think this was another an effort here by ECW that, you know, everyone knows Raven's leaving. He's such a key character here that we are going to give this huge show. We're going to shake up a ton of stuff so that by the end of it, everyone is talking about what is next for ECW instead of, you know, looking at Raven in the rearview mirror here. Mm-hmm. I think this was a huge part of booking this as they were. And this would also lead to Douglas getting into the ECW title picture, Taz getting his television title run, and I think, you know, he's losing to Sabu technically here, but he's still going to leave here a monster and with a title, no less. Mm-hmm. So, there we go.
And that closing spot he has where, because Douglas tries to do the same thing that Sabu does to beat him, and he adjusts to it and beats Douglas, so it's showing that he's learning immediately, and that psychology in there of, like, they were great at booking Taz. Like, even I watched the Paul Varlins match that he had with Taz. Yeah, that classic, where it's just constant double leg takedowns and then one submission hold. And it's like, they were just really, like, Paul Heyman was so good at booking these guys, like, specific characters.
It might have been Heyman's greatest project was Taz, and then what he created. What both of them, you know, not just giving all the credit to Heyman, but it was just a fantastic character that everyone believed in that time period. So, the Dudleys are then in the ring. Devon's head is all wrapped up, and Gertner announces the Red Wings are leading the Flyers in the third period. So I don't know if I assume this was the night of Game 4, but whatever. Todd Gordon then comes into the ring, noting that Perry Saturn has torn his ACL. He's going to be out for a year, and he brings the Eliminators out to relinquish the tag titles to the Dudleys. Saturn is out on crutches with John Cronus. Leg is all wrapped up. And amazingly, this guy would actually return in August. This was June, and had a match in September of that year, but that would be in WCW, actually. And the Eliminators want the match, and Todd Gordon allows it. A horrible commissioner here.
Yeah, just, any pressure? Done. Like, just...
So it was essentially Perry Saturn was on the floor here as John Cronus basically had a handicap match here with Bubba and Devon, and they kept using this annoying metaphor that John Cronus is an egg without a yolk.
I don't know what that doesn't mean anything.
I don't know. Then they talk about relinquishing titles and Styles saying, you know, Shawn Michaels wasn't willing to, he had to relinquish a title because he wasn't willing to fight our own Shane Douglas. And then Rude brings up, didn't Michaels relinquish another title as well? In reference to Michaels recently losing his smile and Rude not referencing the fact that I will be in this man's group in 2 months from now. then from there, Cronus hits a number of kicks. Big Dick gets into the ring and choke slams him, which like candy to a baby here, feeding Rick Rude's lines here, saying, that is one big dick. And the Dudleys double-teamed Cronus, and Dick continues to assist. Saturn gets into the ring here, hits a Bubba cutter onto Ray, selling his knee, and then Cronus gets a near fall. Bubba then Irish whipped into the corner. Devon is on the turnbuckle, but Cronus with a handspring kick into the corner that they called the Hurricane Cronus. And then another Irish whip of Bubba into the referee. Eventually, Cronus gets on top, hits a 450 splash onto Devon. The referee had been knocked out at this point, and Bubba elbow drops him. Devon is still laying, and Saturn then attacks Big Dick with his crutch, climbs to the top, and hits an elbow drop onto Devon, and Perry Saturn pins Devon Dudley at 7 minutes and 31 seconds. As Saturn is then helped to the back, and they bring out a stretcher for him. And Perry Styles then announces that Perry Saturn is from another world. I would have preferred if he said Saturn is from another planet.
Yeah.
That would have been the corny sign-off if I was calling this show. So anyway, there. You gave the fans a surprise finish. You probably all thought it was a foregone conclusion. Saturn was losing the title. Instead, they would drop him about 3 weeks later.
I thought to end the show, I would have preferred if it was the previous segment or even the Dreamer-Raven match, but to me, this wasn't the highlight of the show to me. I thought it was sort of a anticlimactic end to the show.
Yeah, I really liked it, actually. I don't know, I really liked it just because, like John said, no way this is going to happen. That elbow drop looked insane. I think it really does a lot well to have all those segments blend into each other, and then have a standalone segment at the end, rather than having Dreamer and Raven be the last segment, kind of catching people off by surprise, having it earlier in the night than they thought. I don't know. Watching this again is one of my favorite shows, just the way it flows and everything.
So when it comes to a ranking out of 10, Dylan, are you giving the elusive 10 here?
I get to do that? Oh, this is crazy.
Oh, of course.
I'm going to give this an 8 just because the like booking-wise, this is an amazing show, and I really do think that you get the most out of all the characters, and I really like the stories in it. But there's too many like slow matches where they're particularly in the Funk and Candido match, it seems like they're just trying to set up spots so much, and I was like, why isn't Tammy Sitch out there just giving him a chair so this takes like 10 seconds less?
Yeah, I give this one an 8 as well. I thought the booking on the show was tremendous. I thought this was so well done booking-wise. And I thought the ending to Dreamer and Raven, I thought it was very well done. And the angle to me with Lawler and everyone was the highlight of the show. So a fun show to go back and watch. Actually, a show I have not seen before. So It was fun to watch.
There's a 40-minute stretch there, going from the end of that Raven-Dreamer match all the way to the Taz winning that title that I just thought was some of the best pro wrestling TV I'd seen in a long time. And so give this a 7.5.
All right, so we are going to transition now over to some feedback, because there are some of you out there who have watched this show, and Wei, why don't you start off the feedback?
No, why don't you start it off, because I'm loading it.
All right, we'll go to Jeff from New Jersey. During this period, I was attending most of the ECW Arena shows from the summer of 96 to 98, and I remember this show quite well, although I rewatched my DVD for anything I've forgotten over the past 15 years. Very fun show, which greatly benefited from the working relationship ECW had with the WWF at the time. Show kicks off with Rude and Joey Styles in the ring setting up the show. Rude debuted earlier that year under a mask harassing Shane Douglas. He's mainly commentating at this point as a face announcer. Let's go on here to Shane Douglas comes out to the ring. Okay, This is a mini recap here, which we've got you covered on that side here. Let's get his thoughts on the.
Well, that's long.
Yeah, this is long. This is a full recap of
that
the show.
That guy put this. That's a whole podcast just to read that.
Okay, well, we thank you very much for the feedback there, Jeff.
Keep it concise, guys, if you can.
You're the best, Jeff.
Christian Small says, I checked out the show online and I wasn't overly impressed. I completely forgot that Rick Rude was in ECW at the time and that he decided to show up midway through the show to do commentary. But during this opening, he introduced the Dudleys by saying they're men on a mission. I mean, you might confuse Devon for Mo, but Bubba was by no ways looks like a white Mabel. He was close, though. Speaking of the Dudleys, their match with Sandman and Balls was a mess, but it was nice to see those two looking healthy and not crack addicts as they do now. Balls looked like he should be someone beating his wife, and I think Sandman was really drunk as he hit Balls with a plancha, and everything he did looked awful. My two highlights of the show were Terry Funk, who took some insane bumps for his age. I really liked the Raven Dreamer match and the angle which followed. It was great to see such heat. Sadly, this was followed by Taz Sabu and the Taz Shane promos, which was nothing but brothers and fucks. Also, this was when the Philly crowd was in complete dicks like they became lately, so they are actually entertaining a bit. I would give this show 6 brother fucks out of 10.
What is your ruling way when it comes to Chael Sonnen? Should we read this feedback, or are we feeding the beast here?
Is it from Chael Sonnen?
It is not from Chael Sonnen. But you were a big fan of his feedback the last time. Okay,
yeah,
well, here we go.
You should try to read it as Chael Sonnen.
Okay, well, we'll keep reading Chael Sonnen as long as it's entertaining.
Can you do it as Chael?
No, I cannot do it as Chael. I will read it, but I'm not doing a Chael voice. All right. Do not fear Justin Parrott and Wei Ting. Chael Sonnen is back on the law boards and ready to bring back Review Away to the glory it never had. I'm going to make this radio show the most viewed of all time, just like I resurrected The Ultimate Fighter from the ashes and made it the most viewed TV series of all time. After Shane, I don't like random drug testing, so I'm going to pull out of the fight with a fake injury. Carwin and Roy Diabetic Nelson almost killed it by being the most uncharismatic pair since the two turds that came out of my ass this morning. After winning multiple Emmys for The Ultimate Fighter, okay. We need to get to this. As for ECW, who the hell cares about that brand? That brand is more dead than Rampage and Chuck Liddell's career combined, and I'm glad that fake movie star extra is gone now, so I have one less scrub to defend the light heavyweight title to. Crap out of 10 stars from ECW WrestlePalooza 97, because it needs more of Chael P. Sonnen and less of Sabu being high on coke all the time. As for Wei Ting, I'm calling you out. You've ducked me for the last 8 years. All right. This has absolutely nothing to do with WrestlePalooza in the least. I can appreciate if he took this Chael Sonnen character and applied it to WrestlePalooza feedback, but it has absolutely nothing to do with the subject at hand. So I'm putting a strike here against Chael Sonnen.
Brian from Buffalo. This show is nearly 16 years old, and two people on it are two main figures of a current main event storyline. Yes, the Aces and Eights have ruined this show for me, and Taz and Devon didn't do much to make me think otherwise with the promos they cut here. But they both won matches on this card, which, as we all know, is very un-Aces and Eights-like. Overall, this was an average card made memorable by Jerry Lawler's appearance, which overshadowed Raven's highly over-gimmicked last match, as well as Taz and Sabu's probably least memorable match ever. It's sad to watch this card and see all the guys no longer with us, but it's fun for nostalgia reasons. There's a reason this card wasn't put on pay-per-view and Heat Wave was. 6.5 Saturn injuries out of 10.
Chris in Ottawa writes, hey guys, I'm always excited to revisit an event originating from the very special venue of South Philly. ECW was a product that is often imitated but will never be duplicated. The relationship between everyone involved in ECW, from the brass to the boys to the fans, was a unique one, and even just by watching it, you begin to feel like you're part of an exclusive club, complete with dozens of unifying chants and an appreciation for a performance style that, above all else, rewards hard work. Watching this particular event was bittersweet for me, given Taz's featured role. During the late 90s, I was a very big fan of his, and he's right in his prime here, amazing in all facets of his performance. For the last several years, however, just about everyone who watches TNA doesn't have a kind thing to say about the guy. Not to say that he hasn't earned his share of criticism, I just missed the human suplex machine, who was dynamite between the ropes and could talk shit with the best of them. Just 1 week after WrestlePalooza, I'll Be Missing You, performed by Puff Daddy, Faith Evans, and 112, would hit number one on the Billboard charts and stay there for 11 weeks. Still, I think we all miss ECW a great deal. I can't think of a more appropriate song to play you out as this week's episode of Review Away comes to a close.
Well, that'd be up to Dylan.
Yeah, Dylan gets to choose the song this week.
And, I don't know. That guy put his foot down pretty hard there.
He's always trying to, you know, crowbar his musical taste into the show.
Reed from Kansas City by way of China. Hello from the PRC. I didn't watch wrestling until 1998, but I did get the show on VHS when Pioneer Home Video released it a couple years later. I don't have access to it now, but I do remember the final Raven vs. Dreamer match being quite good. I liked how they transitioned immediately from the end of one program to the beginning of the next by having Lawler attack right afterwards. I think it added a lot of the hopelessness of the Tommy Dreamer character. His greatest rival was beaten, his largest obstacle cleared, yet he didn't get a moment to celebrate or even rest in his achievement. I don't know about anyone else, but things like that kept me endeared to Dreamer, even when my friends could only see him as a pudgy, slow brawler. Unfortunately, the payoff to the Dreamer-Lawler feud at Hardcore Heaven 97 doesn't quite live up to the rest of the angle, but does anyone else remember the show where Jim Cornette showed up and hit Dreamer with a tennis racket? That was a cold day in hell, so to speak. As for the rest of the show, I recall Chris Candido wearing Terry Funk's tights, Taz giving Sabu his win back from Barely Legal, well, sort of, the start of the big Taz-Douglas feud that would end with Taz winning the world title, and Perry Saturn doing his best Zach Allen impression before there was a Zach Allen. It was a good show, but not quite as memorable to me as Heatwave 98. Another Pioneer Home Video that was released earlier. I'll give it 7 Rick Root mustaches out of 10, you know, if I have to make up a silly rating system like that.
And our final piece of feedback comes from Trenton, Texas. It's odd how little Rick Rude has appeared on Review Away. This almost seems like his debut on the podcast, despite him being a big player in the business from the late 80s to his death in 1999. It was weird seeing a young babyface-looking Balls Mahoney. At this point, he wasn't completely physically repulsive. But soon after this, he would descend into the most disgusting and vile-looking wrestler of his era. A title he still flies proudly to this day. I really got a kick out of seeing wrestlers who wore t-shirts and very little six-packs at the show. I think the WWE needs to have more of these types of physiques just for wrestlers to stand out and not be so cookie-cutter. I bet if you put a Balls Mahoney or Axel Rotten type on today, he would get over because he would be unique and stand out so much. The variety and strength in characters that ECW offered was its biggest strength, and the show was living proof of that. It can't be stated enough just what Paul Lee did with this roster of mostly mediocre wrestlers and what he did for them. In spite of the terrible garbage wrestling and horrible production values throughout the show, it was still more enjoyable than any 5-star ROH show simply because of the investment in characters and just how fun and over they were. Like I said, there was terrible garbage wrestling throughout the show. That style of constantly using weapons and crowd brawling is something I don't miss at all about the boom era of wrestling. Barely anybody had a clue about ring psychology or how to structure a match with its place on the card. Still, I enjoyed the show. For some good ECW nostalgia, and say 6 out of 10. I would disagree in terms of, to me, it's when it comes down to getting a match over, it all comes down to how the crowd reacts. And I don't think you can really disagree with, you know, whatever means you get there. You can criticize. I just broke
my iPhone. And there's something to be said for that. Usually shows kind of go up. The crowd starts off a little lukewarm, and then, you know, something gets their interest. And by the end, they're peaking. These guys are literally peaking for the whole show. It's like 2.5 hours of just the crowd losing their mind. And even the best thing about the ECW crowd is even when something's boring, they just make it fun for themselves. They don't just sit there and kind of wallow in like, why isn't this better? They're gonna yell faggot at you. They're gonna mention girls' boobs in negative ways or whatever.
The heartwarming ECW audience. Well, as we wind down here, Dylan, me and Wayne need to pick something for next week, and then we will get an update on you as well of what is coming up for you in the abroad as well. But Mr. Ting, for next week, I had an idea. If you're, we discussed this. Are you interested in reviewing British Boot Camp next week?
Yes.
Which are 6 episodes, but they're each 20 minutes, which times out to be the same length as this WrestlePalooza.
I'm down for that.
Okay, so next week we're going to review the entire British Boot Camp series.
Where can people find this?
It is readily available on YouTube if you type in British Boot Camp. Every episode
is
right there.
British Boot Camp, first
British Boot Camp just recently aired on Challenge TV in the UK. Was produced by TNA with Jeremy Borash, the main person behind it, shooting this, editing this, and it features 4 prospective talents. You had the Blossom Twins, Rockstar Spud, and Marty Skrull, all vying for a TNA contract. And it's not so much in the ring as it is it's out of the ring stuff. They attend Bound for Glory, and it's like how you act in the back with people. I think it's gotten very good reviews, but I haven't seen any of it yet. So yeah. I think it'd be an interesting review for next week. So we'll chat British boot camp next week. But Mr. Gott, I want to thank you very much for coming into studio.
Oh, thank you for having me.
What is happening? For those that maybe are on the message board saying, well, who's Dylan Gott? Who is Dylan Gott? And where can they see you if they're in Toronto or anywhere?
If you want to come see me this Saturday, I'll be at the Dominion Pub for a fundraiser for something.
What a sell that was.
No, it's the... Man, it's for pets, that's for sure. I forget.
For pets.
Yeah, for pets. Just for all the pets.
Oh, okay.
And the next Saturday, I will be at the Comedy Bar, January 16th. The headliner will be Gavin Stevens.
February 16th?
Yes.
Okay, you said January.
Oh, really? Oh, man.
Don't right. book too far in advance.
yeah, February 16th. And for all my other dates, just go to DylanAGott.com because for some reason Dylan Gott was taken.
That's G-O-T-T.
G-O-T. D-Y-L-A-N. A as in Adam and then G-O-T-T. And yeah, I'll be, if you live in Nova Scotia or Newfoundland, I'll be there to the end of March.
Who is DylanGott.com? Who is it?
I don't know. There are other Dylan Gotts. I have some of them on Facebook. One is they're both very intimidating people, actually.
But you've got Dylan Gott on Twitter.
Yeah, I got Dylan Gott on Twitter. I got it on Instagram. If you guys want to see how my meals turned out, you can add me on Instagram. Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know why this guy just got DylanGott.com, laughed, and then I don't know. He might be sending threatening emails to me right now.
Do you do any wrestling jokes in your typical sets? I remember at your Foley show, you had a lot of some wrestling related material.
Yeah, that's the problem. Is that another comedian in the city, K. Trevor Wilson? He's a very funny guy.
He's got a great bit.
Yeah, he's got a great wrestling joke that's very like relatable to everybody, and I haven't done that. I used to have a Mike Awesome joke, and then I realized who would know who Mike Awesome is.
No.
It was like but it wasn't even like it was very intricate. I was like 22, and I was like, people are going to appreciate the art in this very intricate character breakdown of Mike Awesome.
Have you been any to any of the fight brand shows that have been in the city that they've held at what's it called?
Transact?
The Transact.
No, I haven't. But I heard some good and bad stuff.
Well, because Ernie, our buddy, like when we ran it, I think one of their first shows, me and Way were at, and they were saying, yeah, they're doing stand up at the intermission, and I just thought this will be a disaster, and it actually got over pretty well. I was pretty impressed because K. Trevor Wilson and Ernie did stand up at the intermission, and I just never thought that stand up comedy could work at a pro wrestling event.
That's fantastic,
but it did
totally work. I mean, like you were saying, there's such a crossover in the community, right? And what else are you going to do during an intermission?
I think it works for guys that understand the wrestling fan and can cater some of your material.
The Transact is a very different club, though.
I think if you're just a stand-up that's just coming in for a gig and it's, I'm at a wrestling
stand-up
show
probably,
and I'm doing my set, there could be problems.
I'm thinking stand-up might not go over as well at an ROH show or maybe a WrestleMania.
But I would love to see it.
I think it'd just be a matter of verbally destroying someone in the crowd, and then people will be like, well, this guy's kind of like a wrestler. Like, this is like Kevin Steen.
Kind of like promos, if you think
like
about
Cena,
it.
Like
yeah,
Cena
exactly.
On that Heyman fan in the front row a few weeks ago on Raw, but waking up with bodily fluids in his bed.
He's a great comedian.
John Cena is who I strive to be as a comedian.
Oh,
can I just say that? I have a doctorate in thugonomics, and so does he. So we have stuff in common. We're going to hang out all the time. But yeah, what was I going to say? Where's the stage at the Transact? Was it like... Was the ring kind of on the stage? Because I've seen that before.
No,
that
they had a band on the stage, and then the actual ring was in the middle. And it could fit what? Like, I would say under 100 people fit in. But it was cool because it was full, which I much rather a small place that is full than a high school gym where it's like the same 100 people, and this feels like I'm at the convention in The Wrestler, where it's just very sad. And it's high school gym shows are typically tough to get over because there's a level of sadness if there's...
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Snuka on the
card. But I don't know if you guys have seen this, but Human Tornado had a really great spot where it's sad that a guy, I think he's retired now, but he used to be really good at high school gyms because he was good at high school gym hardcore matches. But he had a spot where he would dunk on the guy on the basketball net and then do a Hurricane Rana.
Wow.
And I thought that was...
I think I've seen a spot of that. I think I've seen something online similar to that using a basketball net. So maybe you're thinking or saying the same thing I'm thinking of. I don't know. High school gym show. Somebody needs to put out a DVD. The best of high school gym matches.
New Jack versus Gypsy Joe would be on there. If anyone hasn't seen that and you want to feel really awkward for 5 minutes, the New Jack breakdown of him versus Gypsy Joe is just terrifying. Oh,
wow. The oldest wrestler in the world against one of the craziest.
The craziest.
Yeah. And if you want, we'll plug Colt Cabana's podcast. If you want,
oh, that's a great episode.
If you want to check out his interview with New Jack, you can get a whole behind the scenes of how they put together shows like WrestlePalooza 1997, brought to you by cocaine and other pills.
Oh, man. That New Jack podcast is one of the most entertaining things I've heard. Also, aside the British boot camp thing, if you want to listen to your guys' podcast about British boot camp and then go back, actually, Jeremy Borash is on Colt Cabana's podcast and talks about the production of it and some of Dixie Carter's very funny notes about it.
Yeah. Well, we've given Colt Cabana one plug. Edit it out on this show. Let's keep this within reason here. All right. Well, we're going to get on out of here. In the meantime, you can always go to liveaudiowrestling.com. Follow at Dylan Gott. That's two T's, everyone, on Twitter. DylanAGott.com. Don't even bother with DylanGott.com. Very, very confusing.
So disappointing, guys.
And then @way0937, @law radio, and we will be back later this week with more shows, more free shit, and British boot camp next week.
Weren't we going to do a giveaway the contest?
Well, we did it this past Monday.
Oh, we did.
On Review of Raw.
Where's my memory?
You're getting Alzheimer's or something.
Yeah, I think I am.
Dylan, the floor is yours, though, in terms of a musical extra here. What would you like to go out with? And don't feel tied to I'll Be Missing You. It's whatever you would like.
As much as I would like to be I'll Be Missing You, I'm going to go with War Machine by Kiss, Taz's theme music during this period.
All right. A perfect end to our chat on WrestlePalooza 97. Thanks a lot, Dylan. We very much appreciate
you. Oh, man. Thanks so much for having me, guys. I'm a big fan. This was great.
Great end.
Thank you.